This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
If Florida State is doing national championships, ACC championships,
back to the basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get more banged and bruised, work in a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success to either something I can really do this.
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a VSporto channel. I'm your host, Jason Staples, and today's program is going to be a question and answer program, sort of a frequently asked questions kind of thing, where what we did is we asked for questions on our premium board on Nole Digest, and some of the subscribers gave a list of questions, and we're going to take those one by one over the course of this podcast. We're going to divide it up into two segments on this particular podcast. We're going to deal with offense and defense, and then we're going to run a second podcast to follow this one shortly thereafter, where we're going to deal with more general stuff. So let's go ahead and get started on segment one, where we're going to talk about the offense and some of the questions that that some of the Nole Digest premium subscribers had about the offense. And we'll start with the question: do you think we will finally see a good number of offensive snaps in ace two tight end? So that's a one back, two tight end setup. And one of the reasons I think for this particular question, and I think it's a really good one. One of the reasons this is a good question is that actually Jimbo Fisher really likes the two tight end look. He's a big fan of it, and in fact, before Jacob Hester was on the roster, before he sort of stepped up and became a big-time player as a junior at LSU, Jimbo Fisher's offense at LSU really didn't use the tight end, or didn't use the fullback all that much. He preferred that those extra tight end looks would go three wide or two tight rather than going with that two-back formation. Now, Florida State has been more of a two-back team when they've not been in the spread. They're a base spread team, really. I mean, they tend to be 11 personnel more often than not. That's one tight end, one back. That's the base personnel that Florida State's been in really since Fisher's been at Florida State. But when they're not in that 11 personnel, they tend to be in 12, that is two backs, more than they're in 21. That's your ace two tight end. But Fisher actually would prefer, I think, to be more of an ace two tight end kind of guy than as far as that backup when they're not in a more of a spread look. He prefers that balanced two tight end look and some of the things that you can do with those big bodied tight ends because of the versatility that brings to your offense. That allows you to release a guy into the pass route a little quicker. You can treat him as an H back and move him around and do some of the same stuff that you would with a fullback with that tight end, if you've got some versatility there. And actually the ideal guy to do that with was Nick O'Leary, but they didn't have a true tight end, you know, a bigger body, you know, inline kind of guy. So they had to use O'Leary in that role more. But ideally what, you know, Fisher I think would like would be to have, you know, a Maven Saunders, who's kind of your prototype. Once he actually develops, he's basically your prototype body for that inline tight end in Fisher's offense, and then have like an O'Leary as that second tight end where you can have him in line, you can move him around, you can do a lot of things with him. Fisher really likes doing that. So that's the reason for this question, and it's a good one for that reason. And by the way, the reason that Fisher likes to run that two tight end stuff is because of how it forces defenses to balance. It forces defensive fronts to try to either basically pick a strength, which then means that you can have numbers to the other side, or balance out, which then limits in terms of coverages and in terms of fronts and stunts and that sort of thing, what you can do defensively. And Fisher is really big on making sure he likes his offense to be able to simplify what the defense can do against it, so that he's, again, his quarterback is the last one holding the chalk. So that two tight end look is something he really likes because of what it can do to simplify that defense and balance it out and force some looks that he likes to see. But this year, I don't think is the year we're going to see as much of that. I think we're going to see a lot more of that in 2016. And the reason for that is because the tight ends at Florida State right now are really just a year away from being developed to the point where I think Fisher's ready to put those guys on the field over some of the other skill talent. Maven Saunders is the guy that, like I said, he's kind of the prototype. He runs like a receiver. He's built like an NFL guy. I mean, he looks like he's been in the NFL for 6 years already. I mean, he's built like you would build a tight end if you did it from the platonic ideal. It would look something like Maven Saunders, but he's kind of like where Kelvin Benjamin was as a sophomore. That he just isn't quite ready to make the leap at this point. He's where, you know, you're going to want to get him on the field. You're going to want to get him those reps just to get him ready to get and hope that maybe the light bulb does come on this year, but he's not quite there. And if you remember where Kelvin Benjamin was as a sophomore, this is, you know, in 2012, he was a guy that, if anything, he probably played a little bit more than he should have. And it was, again, because they knew that once the light bulb went on for that guy, he was just going to be a nightmare for defenses. And he was that nightmare in 2013. But in 2012, people were already kind of buzzing about him because of some of the stuff that he would do in practice and because of the just wild body that he had for the position. And that's basically what you got with Saunders. And he's kind of in that same position where when you're going to put him on the field, you're going to have to expect some of the inconsistency, some of the problems. I mean, this is a kid who hasn't played a lot of competitive football. Kid from the Bahamas, more of a basketball player when he was brought in. He has that skill set. He just doesn't, he's not really experienced enough that you can expect a lot of consistency out of him. So he's a guy I think they're going to push on the field like they did with Benjamin, but you're going to see some frustration with missed blocks and with lots of things. And with the tight end in this offense, you have to worry about if a guy misses a block on the edge, that can submarine a drive. So, you know, it's not like a wide receiver position where, you know, you miss a block on the edge. Sometimes it's not disastrous. It just means you don't get as big of a gain or whatever. Tight end, it's a little bit more telling if a guy's not quite ready in terms of what it can do. So you have to be patient with that. But I think in 2016, you're going to see a ton of two tight end stuff. You're going to see it with Saunders and Izzo both on the field. And then Jeremy Kerr also as a third tight end. I do think where we might see more two tight end and even three tight end stuff is in short yardage. This year, I think we're going to see more big packages in the short yardage situations with Jaquez Patrick in the backfield, that sort of thing. And it'll be very interesting in goal line to see whether or not the extra size that they have on the field at tight end is going to make a difference there. So just in terms of what they have in offense, I expect to see more spread option type stuff. And if anything, we're going to see more jet sweep stuff. We're going to see, this is where Kermit Whitfield is actually going to be, I think, on the field more, particularly early in the year before some of the younger guys start to get more consistent. You're going to see some of the stuff that you saw in 2008 with some of the jet sweep packages, with option stuff where you package a zone read with the slot with somebody like Kermit in the slot coming around for a pitch. These sorts of things are the sorts of things that I think we're going to see more of in 2015 in advance of more pro style ace two tight end type stuff in 2016. And I think, you know, at this point, I'm expecting DeAndre Francois to probably be the lead guy coming out of spring for that offensively. And that fits his skill set much more, being able to push the ball downfield and some of those, I think, more drop back passing game will package really well with the two tight end set. So let's move to the second question then, which is a related question. Who's the most important wide receiver to have a breakthrough? And this is a complicated question because it depends on what you mean by a breakthrough. I would say the most important wide receiver this season is Travis Rudolph. He's a guy who has to be really, really consistent. They've got to get consistent, stable play and some big plays from Travis Rudolph. He needs to be the rock out there. I like Bobo Wilson more than a lot of people do. I think he can be a reliable guy. You know, he got dinged up a little bit. He got hit pretty hard against Miami last year and struggled a little bit after that. But before that, he was actually quite good. But he's small and there's limitations to his game. He can't threaten you vertically as much. But, you know, and he knows where he needs to be. He's going to be, I think, a better player this year than a lot of people realize. But I think Travis Rudolph has to be the guy that sort of steps forward and demands that teams cover him. So I think he's got to have that kind of breakthrough to sort of set the table for everybody else. But if we're talking about a guy who, maybe isn't on the radar as much as Rudolph, who really is the you know, he's wide receiver one on the roster, then I think you can make an argument for either Pig Harrison or for George Campbell. And the reason for that is last year, one of the things that limited the Florida State offense, and this was sort of odd given that they had such a prodigious talent, such a savant at the quarterback position, is they struggled really to take the top off of defenses. They didn't have any receivers who really threatened people deep. Whereas in 2013, people were terrified of Kelvin Benjamin in the vertical game. They didn't have a receiver that really threatened people much in the vertical game last year because they were a little smaller. They didn't have that kind of physical presence out there. And Ermin Lane's a big receiver, but he's not that kind of vertical receiver. He's more of a second wide receiver, you know, your traditional X, that he's going to be able to get that stuff in between the hashes. He's a big body guy that should be able to make some of the tough catches that you expect, but he's not a guy that's going to track speed you deep. That's something that Harrison and Campbell bring to the table, and I think that's where they're really important in this offense, because this offense, especially with Golson doesn't throw the best. He's not as consistent in that intermediate zone area, but he throws a really good deep ball, which means that they need to have some guys that are actually ready to get open on those deep balls and threaten teams deep. And in, given what they're going to be doing, I think, in the running game, that's going to set up some of those play action bits, which means that Harrison and George Campbell, who are the guys that really have that burst, that deep speed and size to be vertical guys, those guys have to be the guys that step up and become playmakers there. I think you're going to get some inconsistency with those guys due to their youth. But Florida State's desperately going to need, on top of Travis Rudolph becoming the guy who demands that teams cover him, the thing that they're going to need from the wide receiver position outside of that is for Harrison or Campbell or both to become that deep threat that teams have to really worry about and keep a safety over top, which opens up some of the rest of the field, both for the running game and for some of that underneath passing stuff that again, Golson's pretty good underneath on the shorter stuff. It's just that intermediate stuff that they're going to need more space. And if they're going to get that space, it's going to have to come by one of those receivers learning to challenge and proving to be a challenge downfield on that vertical stuff. So the third question on the offensive side, then let's go ahead and transition to that. Is the center position. How good or how rough will it be? We saw the effect it had last season on an overall talented and pretty dominant line. And yes, it was a huge difference. You could see the difference once Cam Irving went to center and stabilized that position. That offensive line was arguably the best in the country after that. But it was it was rough before that when Austin Barron first was there. And then after that, Ryan Hofeld was there. And those guys just, they were not blocking at a championship level. They were not blocking at a Florida State level. And you know, you could really argue that they were not blocking at a BCS conference level. And that really made a difference. You can't be good on the offensive line if the very centerpiece of your offensive line is getting blown by every play. I think there's still some questions on that center position right now. I don't think it's going to be anywhere near what it was last year. You know, Alec Eberle was, you know, he actually was going to be the guy. You've got two guys who beat out Ryan Hofeld in the spring and the fall, which is already a good sign, because that tells you it's going to be better than it was with Hofeld there last year. And then Eberle was going to potentially be the guy, but he's been struggling a little bit with the snaps. There's a health issue right now. So it's going to be Corey Martinez for now. And Martinez, he's got some decent size, but he's not one of the maulers that you've had there. It's not going to be what you had with Cam Irving or with Brian Stork. You're not going to get that out of the center position here. But I think that there's going to be enough consistency, enough of an ability to make sure that, you know, the guy's actually in the right position and isn't just getting run over. I don't think you're going to see that with Martinez or Eberle. Neither one. I mean, they're both pretty decent size guys. They're both about 6'4", 295 to 305 area, and those are legitimate weights. They're not going to be guys that just get run over, which, honestly, at this point, given the guys that are around them, when you've got maulers like R and Bell next to them, that really is what you need. You just need a guy who can make sure that he's quick enough to get a good snap and quick enough to cut off penetration from the defense, from the nose tackle out of that spot in the zone running game or in the pass protection game. You've got to have a guy who's just quick enough and strong enough to anchor to not get run over. And I think they'll get that. I'm not sure how much more than that they're going to get out of the center position at this point. Now the wild card here at center, the wild card is Cole Minshew. Now Cole Minshew is a grown man. That's an 18-year-old grown man. That's, you know, 340 pounds of grown man, and that is a powerful kid. And he's a kid that they really wanted to be on the field and in the starting lineup from day one. I mean, he came in day one and was dominant on the boards. He came in day one and was immediately one of the best linemen on the team, certainly on the interior. Unfortunately, he had an ankle injury in camp, and they, you know, both he and the coaching staff tried to rush back from it a little bit too early, and so he had a setback. And at this point, he's missed too many reps to actually be there. And the question is whether or not he really can play at that center spot. And that's still an open question as well. But I think that's a kid that's going to be in the starting lineup at some point this year, whether it's taking Wilson Bell's spot at the right guard spot, which then potentially makes some things happen at the right tackle spot. Who knows? But I think the right tackle spot with Kelly probably stays there. But the question at that right guard spot of whether Minshew takes that or whether Minshew, who took some snaps, he was taking snaps at that starting center position at about the midpoint of camp before that ankle injury held him out. If he's getting back in and getting more of a look again at center, if you put Minshew at center and he's healthy and he's able to make the calls, then, well, you're looking at a four-year starter and you're looking at a first-rounder at center. You know, you're talking about a kid that has a ridiculously high ceiling because of how powerful he is. Just a ridiculously powerful individual. We'll obviously know more once we actually get into the season, but you know, that's the best estimate. That's what we know at this point. That's as much as I can say, as much as we know at this point. And you are listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio of eSporto Channel. We're talking about defense in this second segment. We're doing a question and answer based on questions submitted by Noel Digest Premium subscribers on the Noel Digest Premium board. We're going to handle some of the questions on the defensive side of the ball now. I addressed one of these questions a little bit at the end of the last podcast, or I guess two podcasts ago now, talking a little bit about what percentages we're going to see base defense. The question was, what percentages would you put on us being in base defense versus nickel or dime, and what does that mean for the run defense, and how do you think we'll try to scheme around that knowing our defenses know that we'll be in 5 and 6 DB alignments? And again, the short answer to that is that the base defense is a nickel. This is a base nickel defense at this point. They're going to be in 3-3-5, 4-2-5 most of the time. They're going to be in dime quite a bit. And I think between the two of them, nickel, dime, they're going to probably be 75-80% of the time in nickel or dime on the season. There are going to be some changes to that. There will be some, you know, it's going to be a little different against teams like Boston College, where they're going to line up in two tight end, two back formations at times, and they're going to try to pound you. Then they're going to change that base eye formation teams, these sorts of things, more power oriented teams. We're going to see a little bit different percentage, but on the year, I think overall they're going to play more spread teams, and the base nickel is going to be where they're at. Now, the thing that, again, I want to reiterate that we talked a little bit about at the end of the last of that podcast when I was addressing this, but I want to emphasize more at this point, is that one change I think we're going to see from this defense is the 2015 defense is going to substitute much more liberally. There's going to be a lot more situational substitution in 2015 than what we saw in 2014. 2014, they operated really with sort of 13, 14 guys that were the core, that was who they used as a rule. So, you know, you knew Jalen Ramsey was going to be at the star. You knew who the two corners are going to be. The two safeties never really changed. The linebackers were the same except for when they were hurt. And the front four was pretty much the same. So, I mean, it was going to be those guys. Those are the guys you're going to win or lose with. And I think that's going to be very different this year. This year, there's going to be a lot more substitution that's going to happen situationally. So you're going to see a different lineup in first and 10 against a power-based team than you will in first and 10 against a spread team, and then you will in, say, second and 5 against a spread team or against a power team. There's going to be a lot of different situations that are going to be addressed in terms of who's on the field. And the first place that you can see that difference is at the star position, where Tyler Hunter is listed right now as the starting star. And he is the starting star. But the question is, against a team like Boston College, who is not going to put three wide receivers or four wide receivers on the field the same way and force you to single cover those guys as much, do you have Tyler Hunter on the field then? And I don't think you're going to see Hunter at the star role there. He may move over to the safety role again, where Brutus is. I mean, he's going to be off the field in those situations. What you're going to see is, at that point, Trey Marshall, who's a little bit more of a hybrid. He's a little bit, you know, kind of a hybrid safety linebacker kind of guy. He's not going to single cover you, but he can do a lot in the star position in terms of against the running game. He offers more than a linebacker against the pass. He's going to be a little bit more your thumper in that role. He's going to be on the field more at the star position against the Boston College when they're not in a true 3-4 or 4-3. And then you're going to see other times, you're going to see Jalen Ramsey move around, although I think less than what they've said. I think he's going to basically be at the boundary position. I think you're going to see, in longer yardage situations, you're going to see either DeMarcus Walker move inside, which is what I'm kind of expecting at this point, or Walker coming off the field, and you're going to have both Jacob Pugh at the buck linebacker position, which in this defense, the way that they're doing that, Pugh is basically going to be in the Dante Fowler Jr. role from Florida last year. That's what Pugh is in this defense. That's what they're expecting from him. But when they go longer yardage, you're going to see Featherston, you're going to see Sweat, you're going to see that other guy on that other side be different from DeMarcus Walker. And then against some of your bigger teams, some of your power teams, you might see Pugh actually in a true outside linebacker position, and you might see Walker and Ricky Leonard opposite each other at those defensive end positions in an even front to go a little bit bigger on that front when they need to stop the run against a Boston College or against a Miami, some teams that are willing to pound it a little bit. So you're going to see a lot of variance on the defensive side in terms of what they're going to do personnel-wise. And that sort of gets to the second question here, which is, the question is as follows. Georgia Tech in the power run game. Will it be a shootout with FSU basically unable to stop the option and run? Well, there are a couple things here. First of all, Georgia Tech is not a power run team. They're a spread team, and they run the spread option. So they're not Stanford. They're not forcing you into phone booth spaces and trying to run it through you. Georgia Tech is really about running where you're not. And in that sense, they're much more similar to an Oregon or to an Auburn than they are to a Stanford. Stanford is a power stuff. Georgia Tech is really, they're trying to run where you're not. And that's one of the advantages. That's why the service academies, for example, run basically Paul Johnson's offense. Because that offense allows you that doesn't ask your guys to actually run through guys. When you have a talent deficit, if the basic scheme is go where they're not, that works a whole lot better than overpower them here. So the question is always with Georgia Tech, whether or not you can get guys in the right spaces to make sure that they don't have wide open, all sorts of room to run. I think this team will be better equipped to stop what Georgia Tech does in that situation than I think a lot of people realize, both because of Terrence Smith being healthy, and I think he's very, very good when he's healthy because of his length and his speed, and because of the length on the edge. They're going to be able to put a Ricky Leonard on the field at 6'7" on the edge against that option, and he's got some quickness and some explosiveness on the edge at 6'7" to set that edge. Same thing with Josh Sweat by that point in the year. I think he's going to be playing a lot by that point in the year. And you're looking at a guy that is 6'5", 240 pounds, and moves well, so well laterally that you can give him that edge and say, play in between and take whatever the quarterback does, you take it. So I think you're going to be able to do a little bit more because of some of what they've got personnel-wise. And again, Trey Marshall looked pretty good against Georgia Tech when he played against them last year. That's a game where I think you're going to see a lot of Trey Marshall and less Tyler Hunter at that star position. You're going to see a lot of Trey Marshall. And at that point, you've got some personnel that you feel comfortable with in terms of being able to run and chase and tackle in the open field. So I actually think that Georgia Tech is less of a concern for Florida State than a lot of people do. But I also think that Georgia Tech is probably an 8-win team this year. They might be a 7-win team this year. I think they're going to underperform. A lot of people are going to talk about them underachieving this year. But if you look at their schedule, I don't know that that is underachieving. I'm just not sure they're that good. I'm not sure that they're as good as they were last year. And I'm not sure even last year against this schedule that they win more than 9 games. They might have. I mean, the way they were playing at the end of the year, there are very few teams that could have beaten them last year. Just ask Mississippi State. But I don't see them being the juggernaut that I think a lot of people expect them to be this year. Partly because they lost those gigantic wide receivers on the edge who could really force you into some problems, both because they could block so well, it's like having tight ends out there, and also because of the way that they could present some serious problems in the vertical passing game. They don't have that. They lost their Kelvin Benjamins, and they had two of them last year, effectively, for their offense. They lost those guys from last year, and I think it's going to make a big difference on them in terms of what they can do to really hurt you offensively. I think they're going to be less scary in the passing game. The run game is always scary, but I think they're going to be a little bit less diverse than what they were last year, a little bit less able to challenge downfield, despite the fact that I think their quarterback is one of the best in the country. I'm not sure they're going to have everything they need in the passing game to threaten you quite as much, and I'm still not sold on their defense. So let's then go to the next question on defense. What's the health like on the front 7? And I think by and large right now, the health up front is about as good as you could ask for coming out of camp. Let's take a second to knock on our heads. They basically, Josh Sweat came out of camp not having had to miss a practice, which is shocking. Featherston, he's still coming back from having his knee cleaned up. They had it scoped. Initially, they were saying about a week and a half, 2 weeks. I was a little skeptical of that when that happened. And then when they went in, they found a little bit more debris that they needed to clean up than they expected. So Featherston should be back by about the Boston College game to being fully healthy. So at that point, the question is whether or not, he's actually going to have been passed on the depth chart by Sweat. Either way, I think he and Sweat are going to play roughly equivalent minutes, equivalent reps over the course of the year. So you got a lot of good health there. Chris Casher is out still from having his knee scoped as well, and he had to have some stuff cleaned up in his knee, and it was a little worse than Featherston's. But really, Casher, they're not counting on Casher to play much this year anyway. So that doesn't matter at this point. He's third on the depth chart, so it doesn't matter very much. And the less Casher plays, the more that tells you that the edge position at Florida State is better than what you'd expect. At defensive tackle, they're healthy. Those guys, the top guys, are healthy, and I think they're going to be pretty good. And linebacker, Northrop has continued to perform well. He's continued to show no ill effects, really, of coming back from that knee injury again. That's remarkable. He's still not the best cover guy. He's a guy that you're going to want to get off the field in coverage situations. You don't want to get him one-on-one with anybody. But the more important one is that Terrence Smith is healthy and playing very well at linebacker. So overall, the front 7 looks good right now. They look healthy. You do have some concerns if any of the bell cows go down up there. But as of right now, things look good. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the Unconquered Podcast. Now, before we get out of here, I want to remind you to follow me on Twitter, at Doc Staples. That's at DocStaples. You can also follow the rest of us over at Noel Digest, NoelDigest.com. And, of course, you can follow Seminole Sports Radio at Seminole Sports Radio for the latest on FSU sports as well. I am Jason Staples. Thanks for listening to the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a Sporto channel.
I made this.